Meet in order. We don't have a quorum at this time, so instead of Representative Swazinski, we're going to hold off just for a moment. All right, we have some very, very special guests here today. I'd like you to, we spoke a little bit briefly in my office here earlier, so you know the routine. Choose somebody to sit down and explain a little bit about who you are and why are you here. State your name for the record and begin, please.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Sam Johnson, and I currently serve as a Minnesota FFA State Officer, and I'm a sophomore at South Dakota State University, studying Ag Business and Ag Communications. Just to get started, for all you to get aware of who we are, we're going to go around and do the introductions with the five of us here.
Wonderful. Hi, Mr. Chair and the committee. I'm Morgan Krause. I am a freshman at the University of Minnesota, studying agriculture education, and I serve as the Minnesota FFA State Vice President.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is P.J. Arsvold from Plainview, Minnesota, currently a sophomore at the University of Minnesota studying mathematics, and I'm currently serving as the state president.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Travis Trundle. I'm originally from Lanesboro, Minnesota, currently a freshman at Iowa State University studying agricultural engineering.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Madison Taylor, and I am from the Randolph FFA chapter, Randolph area. I'm currently a sophomore at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities studying agricultural education.
And so, Mr. Chair and committee members, we are here today because it's FFA Day at the Capitol. So as you look around, we have lots of blue jackets and bright faces in here. And we have over 150 FFA members here at the Capitol today, really here to thank you for your support of agriculture education and the FFA and to share our FFA story.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, just as an overview, FFA is a student-led organization promoting premier leadership, personal growth, and career success. Each of these students in the room here today are developing skills to be professionals in the agriculture industry. Agriculture is a passion of all of ours, and we strive each and every day to work towards making a better future for agriculture and then our communities as well. A big aspect of FFA is building our communities. So we want to make sure that we're not only when we move out to college that we're leaving our communities, but leaving them strong for a foundation for the future and our future families as well.
How many different groups or chapters do we have here today?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, we have right around 20 FFA chapters ranging from 150 students and advisors.
I want to hear from some of them. All right. So what we're going to do, with your permission, all right, looking towards your leadership, let's start with Mora. Why? Because I ran into them in the hallway. So if we have a representative from Mora, are they in here? Now, I specifically told them to be here on time, right? So how about Sleepy Eye? Can we bring down a representative from Sleepy Eye? And so here's what we're going to do, friends. What we're going to do, I'm going to take the time. This is an exciting day, and we love to see you. This is a lot of fun. I know everybody on the committee is very grateful that you're here. So for all the different chapters, all the groups here, choose one person, if you would. Take it upon yourself to do it. And ask them to come up front, because we want to hear from them. So, all right? Just one person per group. And as they're coming up, what I'd like you to do, this is great. And we're going to have to keep it short because we do have some official business to make here as well. All right, so I just want you to introduce your name for the record, where you're from, and just share briefly why are you here.
Mr. Chair, my name is Harley Brown, and I'm from the Sleepy Eye FFA chapter. And I'm here today for FFA Day at the Capitol just to thank all of you for your support for FFA and agriculture education. I'm a senior, and next year I'll be going to the University of Minnesota to study agriculture education. And without the opportunity to have ag classes at my school, I wouldn't have found my passion. So I just wanted to thank you all for your support.
Wonderful. We're happy you're here. Thank you. Next.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Rebecca Paskiewicz, and I'm representing the Staples Motley FFA chapter today of Region 2. We're way up north. We have about 10 members with us here today. We just visited with Senator Carrie Rood, and we had a great time discussing many of the things that we're passionate about in agriculture and thanking her for all the time that you guys put in to recognizing things in agriculture education and the agricultural industry. So thank you for what you do.
Fantastic. Thank you. Next.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee and guests. I am Michael Shaw from the St. Charles FFA chapter. I'm here today to meet with senators and representatives to get a better grip on the other aspects of agriculture besides what you normally see. I like to see the political views and get a nice feeling of what else goes on inside the Capitol. I thank you all greatly for your support and thank you for listening.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Next.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Grant Dottie. I'm from the Randolph FFA chapter. A little repetitive here, but we'd just like to thank you for all you've done for agriculture and FFA. Obviously, Minnesota is a very agricultural heavy state, and that wouldn't be possible without your guys' continued support. So thank you very much.
You can be repetitive if you're paying us compliments. Next.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Janelle Huners, and I am the Region 4 President and Chisago Lakes FFA Chapter President. And we brought around 10 members today, and we're very excited to be here representing FFA and agriculture education. And we just wanted to thank you guys for your continual support of both agricultural education and the FFA.
Thank you. Fantastic. Next.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Erica Robertson. I'm originally from the Zimbrota-Mazapa FFA chapter. I'm currently a senior and also am serving as the Region 8 president. I just want to thank you for all of your time and support of agriculture and agriculture industry as well as agricultural education. Without you, none of us here would be here today and be doing the successful things that we are. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Emily Pliscott from the Kenya-Winnemingo FFA chapter. I am here to say that we are proud to represent our communities, chapters, and the future of agriculture. So we are so thankful for all of your support today.
Thank you so much.
Good morning, Chair members of the committee. I'm here, Chelsea Swanson from Bram FFA. We have 4 members today here, and we're going to be speaking with Senator Nienow and Representative Brian Johnson. I just want to thank you guys for your support and agriculture.
Wonderful. Thank you. Next.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Amanda Barra. I'm here with the Oberle FFA chapter. We have 4 members today, and we'll be meeting with Peggy Bennett and Dan Sparks, and we're just here to support you guys and show our appreciation.
Wonderful. Thank you. Next.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Remington Harder from the FFA, Hutchinson FFA chapter. I am a senior, and I am the secretary. And we're here today to talk to you guys and help you guys get more of the student view. I want to thank you for all your support.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm from the Mora FFA chapter, and I am the chapter reporter. And we're here with 4 members to talk to Representative Rarick about FFA and representing it.
Wonderful. Did you hear me giving you guys heck because you weren't here on time?
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
I just had a meeting with the representative.
We're going to blame her. All right. Fantastic. Any questions or comments, members? Questions or comments? So,
I believe in the future of farming with a faith born not of words but of deeds. Decisions made by past and present generations of agriculturalists in the promise of better days through better ways.
Well, so he's such a show off. However, Mr. Mark Nisley, the committee administrator, said right away, that's not the full thing.
I know.
So Mark was like,
go ahead. You want to pick it up from
it? We also have work to do. Do you have any closing comments? Any closing comments?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, as each of one of these FFA members said up here, we just want to thank you for your continued support. Agriculture education has, in Minnesota, has nearly 10,500 FFA members a part of it. with over 180 chapters crisscrossing the state from north to south and east to west. It's a continually growing program in Minnesota, hopefully reaching nearly 11,000 in the next few years. And we just want to thank you for your continued support, because without you, we wouldn't be able to have the funding for our teachers and our programs and our local communities.
Well, thank you for being here today. We are in good hands. The future is bright, obviously. So you all did an absolute fantastic job. We're happy that you're here. Members, let's welcome them, if you will. We're going to officially call it to order. We do have a number of minutes to approve here. The first minutes for March 10th. Representative Miller. Makes a motion to approve the minutes. Any discussion for March 10th? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The next minutes that we have to do are for March 15th. Representative Pearson, want to move the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for March 15th.
Minutes are moved. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The next set of minutes are, we've been busy, March 16th. Representative, anybody? No, I don't want to call on him. No, I'm just teasing. Representative Metza. Any discussion? Representative Metza moves March 16th minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Fails. And the final ones are for March 29th. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move those minutes.
Minutes are moved. Any discussion on the March 29th minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Oh, I guess we have one more. For September 8th of 2015, we're going way back. We need somebody. Who wants to move those? Representative Bly?
So moved.
All right. Representative Bly moves minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Nay or opposed? Same sign, motion prevails. Representative Swazinski, you're up. Representative Swazinski, I'll move the bill, House File 3182, to put it before us, and this will be held over. We're going to hold the bill over, right? It's a bonding request. We're going to hold it over, and then we'll send our recommendations on to the Chair of Capital Investment. Representative Swazinski, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Hamilton. I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee. We're all fairly familiar, I think, with the duties of AURI and the benefit they carry for rural Minnesota. The bill before us is an appropriation of $606,000 to AURI and its adjoining campuses, and I have some folks here from AURI, the executive director, and others to speak more in depth about the dramatic positive placement of these dollars will be on those campuses and through ARUI. Well, thank you very much, Representative Hamilton.
Wonderful. And if you'd state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Shannon Schleck, the executive director of AURI, and it's a pleasure to be back with you again today to talk about this proposal to better serve the food opportunities that exist across Minnesota. Thank you, Representative Swazinski, for introducing legislation. And I'd also like to introduce my colleague, Dan Scogan, who many of you know, as well as one of my board directors, John Goyle. John has been on the board for many years and serves as our secretary treasurer at this time. So AURI's demand to serve food entrepreneurs across Minnesota has been growing. It is by far our largest area of project numbers that come to us for assistance, for technical assistance, to provide them the needs and the opportunities to move their products forward. We currently have a queue and a backlog for individuals seeking our services. The upgrades that you will hear about from Carissa would provide a better base to service Minnesota's food entrepreneurs through greater efficiency, through more reliable data, through product development and process changes, as well as provide better hands-on assistance with our staff and with the entrepreneurs through improved facilities. Additionally, the upgrades can be used to provide more assistance in terms of HACCP and food safety training and education that we see as a growing need across the state of Minnesota. Minnesota is known for its food industry. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone in this room. And There are a lot of innovative individuals out there in the countryside and within the metro area that are looking at new opportunities, new innovative uses for food, and new innovative food products. In addition to what we've seen, this is also confirmed in the growth in food entries in the Minnesota Cup, which is sponsored by the University of Minnesota. The food egg beverage division has been one of the fastest growing areas of this competition for food entrepreneurs. We also see companies like General Mills looking externally for new food ideas, and that provides opportunities for Minnesota's food entrepreneurs. As you may recall, the statute creating AURI requires us to establish and maintain facilities for the state's entrepreneurs. In the nearly 30 years of AURI's existence and with your partnership, AURI has invested roughly $3.5 million into capital equipment and improvements to serve the entrepreneurs across the state of Minnesota. A small supplemental investment that we're discussing today would improve our Marshall facility and provide new and improved services to the state's food entrepreneurs. Each of you has a packet in front of you containing 14 letters of support from Minnesota organizations, groups that see beneficial opportunities from this investment in the food innovation area. Additionally, there's a two-page document talking about the impacts of AURI, as well as the presentation that you'll see shortly. New food uses result in greater utilization of Minnesota's agricultural production. It also creates jobs and economic opportunities and creates that value here at home, and as additionally provides consumers more choice. AURI's mission is to foster long-term economic benefit for Minnesota through value-added agricultural products. Food is a key area of our work and our effort, and we're excited about what this upgrade could mean for the food entrepreneurs, for agricultural producers, and for small businesses across the state. I'm pleased to introduce Chris Anath. Chris leads our food focus area for AURI, one of our four focus areas. She is based in our Marshall facility. She is a meat scientist and provides training and will provide an overview of the request, the facility upgrades, and what it means for our food entrepreneurs in from Minnesota. Krista?
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Excuse me. Krista Nath, I'm the meat scientist with AURI. Good morning, Mr. Chair and representatives of the committee. Thank you, Shannon, for that introduction. We'll get right into it here. So as Shannon said, AURI provides programs and services that reflect a deep understanding of adding value to Minnesota's agricultural commodities, as well as innovation. AURI is able to deliver those results that matter to Minnesota's food innovators and entrepreneurs because of the state's ongoing commitment to the organization. This is a map that represents our clients. You can see they're spread out across the state. This is not just food clients. This represents all of our clients, but just to show that the help that we provide to entrepreneurs is spread out throughout the state. This chart represents food projects only. It does represent both client projects as well as our other programming area, which is initiatives. Initiatives are public domain, and most of those are funded. You will see, and this represents 2011 to 2015. You see a dip in 2014 and 15, and I will say that we didn't have any project dollars those years. That's why we see a dip in projects overall, specifically funded initiatives. But there's just been a huge growth in terms of food clients and food projects that we deal with. In fact, in 2011 to the present, we've served over 300 clients in the food arena alone. For both 2014 and 2015, all the samples that were analyzed within our analytical lab were food-related, or not all of them, but excuse me, the majority of them were food-related. And I think we're seeing a real growth in the state as well, as Shannon alluded to, in terms of interest in food and food entrepreneurs. Slide here represents 2016 numbers to date. We've had over 26 new food projects to date, and we're on track to have over, I would say, 70 projects in 2016. And I'll also state that some clients or entrepreneurs that we assist don't necessarily go on to have a project, but we still assist them more food businesses in terms of providing advice, guidance, and or resources, and much more through our scientific expertise as well as through our project staff. So as I said, I think the state is really witnessing a growth as well. Shannon mentioned the Minnesota Cup and the Food, Ag, and Beverage Division, as well as, you know, consumers really having an interest in new artisan foods as well as local foods. So they want preferences for foods that are both nutritious as well as convenient, but above all, they have to be safe. So we're just seeing a huge growth in that. So the clients that come to us seek services at a number of different stages, I like to say, in their product development process. And what I mean by that is sometimes we have clients that come to us who may not have a product yet in the marketplace. They just have an idea. So we would work with those clients to develop their idea, develop their recipe, develop the formulation. And then other times we have clients in the food area who do have a product in the marketplace, but maybe it's being made on a smaller scale. Maybe they're just selling that product at farmers markets, and their goal is to sell that at mainstream retail. So then we would help them with that process and getting them into a larger market. Then the third type of client that typically comes to us is that they may already have their product in mainstream retail, but they're looking to expand, maybe on a regional or even national basis. So we would work with them in that aspect. So as I said, we work with a wide variety of clients, and so we also see a wide variety of products, from pickles and salsa to hydroponically grown vegetables and many meat products as well. But as I said, the majority of those food clients are at some point where they're looking to scale up their production, meaning taking it from a cups and tablespoon measurement to a weighted measurement so it can be made on a larger scale for them. So the services that we provide are pretty typical in terms of most of the time, a lot of the things we deal with in terms of technical service is nutrition facts labeling, food safety guidance, product and process development, ingredient and packaging sourcing guidance, as well as shelf life analysis and product evaluation. And what I mean by product evaluation is analytical analysis in order to evaluate the food safety and quality components of that food that would lend to the shelf life of that product and help them make decisions about packaging and those sorts of things that would lend to a shelf life of that. So our food scientist and our meat scientist, as well as our analytical chemist and project staff, work with these food clients in order to provide many valuable services as the client looks to expand their food business.
And Ms. Knapp, did you just recently have a pretty big victory helping out a local business as far as expanding their shelf life on a certain product?
Correct, yep. And that's we've had a couple of different clients like that recently.
Right. Thank you.
Yes.
Representative Clark.
So I noticed that you're doing food labeling and packaging and that sort of thing. Do you ever get into GMO labeling? Have you had any requests for that?
We haven't had any requests specific to that yet, but it's certainly one of those kind of hot topic issues that we try to get as much information about as we can as far as the scientists.
Representative Clark, follow up?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Please.
Obviously, collaboration is essential to the work that we do, from helping us to understand the needs that are out there across agriculture, to generating new ideas and to having the network necessary to help the clients we work with meet their myriad of needs. So this slide is just showing a few of the many partners that we have and collaborators across the state. Obviously, our host universities, as well as the different commodity groups in the state. I would like to expand on a couple of those collaborative relationships specific to food. Our Marshall facility is located on the campus of Southwest Minnesota State University. They have a culinology and hospitality management program. For those of you who don't know what culinology is, it's actually a blending of culinary arts and food science. So instead of just having a culinary arts background, the students are required to have the food science component as well. So we obviously see that as a really good fit with us, and so we try to work with that program as much as possible. We've had interns through that program, as well as working with them on special projects or projects that they might need access to some of our equipment as well. Also, the University of Minnesota Meat Science Program, I work pretty closely with Dr. Ryan Cox, who's the meat science professor there at the University of Minnesota. We, along with a representative from the Minnesota Department of Ag, have three HACCP workshops a year. HACCP is a required food safety program for meat processors as well as a couple of other food industries. And so we give them information on HACCP and help them to develop a HACCP plan or give them the resources to. Dr. Ryan Cox and I also both serve as technical advisors for the Minnesota Association of Meat Processors, which is an organization of small local butchers in the state. Couple other collaborative relationships in regards to food. The Minnesota Peer-to-Peer Food Safety Network is representative of food safety and quality control professionals, mainly representing medium and large companies in the state of Minnesota. So they convene on a quarterly basis in order to talk about topics and areas of interest within their industry. And ARI serves as a facilitator for that group. In addition, we have the Food Industry Thought Leaders, which represents Minnesota Fortune 500 companies, academia, and successful ARI clients. And so that they're helping us to, in terms of the food industry, to understand and respond to research there. Shannon mentioned the Minnesota Cup, also the Minnesota Farmers Union Farm to Plate, or Farm to Table, Farm to Plate program. ARI has had a hand in that as well, and working with Farmers Union on that. Now we'll get into the actual upgrades that are needed. Despite the state's continued investment in ARI, the organization has not been able to adequately update and improve its facilities. Doing this would allow us to provide more outcomes for the state's food innovators and entrepreneurs and to better serve the clients of ARI. We have had a pre-design conducted by an engineering firm an architectural firm out of Wilmer, Ingen and Associates, and they proposed a cost of just over $606,000. There are essentially three components to our ask, and I'll go through each of those briefly. The largest component would be the sensory lab and developmental kitchen component. This is the cost of that is $386,000. The impacts of that is that it would enhance our ability to support small business development opportunities for food entrepreneurs by researching and developing innovative new uses and value improvements for Minnesota's commodities and products. In terms of the impact on ARI's food clients, it would provide them with learning opportunities on food preparation and food safety techniques right alongside our food scientist as well as myself as the meat scientist. And I mentioned the SMSU Culinology program. As far as an impact there, it would provide the students with real-world experiences and allow them to, it would allow us to maintain that synergistic relationship between SMSU's Culinology department and would benefit both the students of the program as well as ARI's clients. The second component is updates to our laboratories. These would include infrastructure upgrades for safety purposes, and it would allow improved safety and operational utility of those existing labs through those upgrades. It would also improve the security of the labs with a new system of door locks and keyless entry, and therefore would allow also ease of access for the clients that we're working with. The final component is the communication upgrades. These upgrades would cost just over $170,000 and would provide information technology upgrades to meet the demands for web-based programming. Since our clients as well as our staff are spread out across the state, there is an increased demand for these web-based programming such as video and webinar conferencing, multi-location interactions, and continuing education. Particularly in terms of the continuing education piece, as far as our HACCP workshops, there may be opportunities to update and provide webinar training on that, as well as with the introduction of the Food Safety Modernization Act, some food safety training as far as that goes. It would allow us to, it would enhance our ability to help educate the state's food entrepreneurs on food safety, food preparation, sensory work, and shelf life, and much more.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifiers? Any questions for the testifiers? Representative Swazinski, any closing comments?
Just appreciate the time in front of the committee, and appreciate your support. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for being here. And all right, with that, we're going to hold the bill over. Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Right.
So, Representative Sandin, you want to move your bill, put it before us, and this will be held over also.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move House File 2601, a bonding and rural finance authority bill.
Okay, we have the bill before us, so please proceed.
Okay, the rural finance authority was formed about 30 years ago to assist farmers in their financial needs as far as expanding herds, holding on to their property. There's plenty of money available for the next generation of farmers to possibly purchase the farm from their parents when they put their parents out to pasture. So we've got well, it could happen to you too. We have Jim Borboom, Deputy Commissioner, to assist us in explaining the bill. But before we get going on that, I've got one of my favorite agricultural products right here. It's saltwater taffy. If we could pass this around.
You know what? I think your bill just passed.
And the reason is I don't really know that much about the Rural Finance Authority and all. This is an agency bill, but this will prevent the members from asking too many questions. They'll be eating candy.
Thank you. Commissioner, please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jim Borboom, Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Representative Sundin did a nice job explaining the history of the bill. It actually was established in 1986, 30 years ago. In your packets, you might have a fact sheet, and I'd be just happy to talk briefly a couple of minutes about some of the features of this loan program. One of the unique features about this program that the Rural Finance Authority partners directly with about 400 agriculture lenders throughout the state of Minnesota. And these include community banks as well as members of the Farm Credit System. And this public-private partnership really helps reduce or improve the cash flows for beginning and entry-level farmers, as well as farmers who are established and want to improve their farming operations. It also provides greater access to credit because the RFA buys 45% of a qualifying loan. The lender, the lead lender, carries 55% of the loan. So that sharing that credit risk improves the access. There's a board that governs the RFA. There's an 11-member board, five agency heads, as well as six public members appointed by the governor. One of the best features about the program is that it is user financed. The authority to sell bonds is something that we work with the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget. Those bonds are sold once a year. We size the bond sale depending on the level of loan demand. The principal and interest receipts that we receive on the loan participations are deposited to a dedicated account, and on December 1 of each year, then Minnesota Management and Budget sweeps the money out of that account and repays the debt service on the bond. So we've had a 30-year history with this program. Since its beginning, it's about 2,900 loans, over $215 million. And one of the surprises, quite honestly, that I look at the program is the level of loan losses is very minimal. And I believe the credit goes to the lenders that originate the loans and the diversity of the loan portfolio. So thank you for your consideration.
Yeah, thank you so much. Any questions, members? Any questions? Representative Clark.
Quick question. Mr. Chairman, I see that one of the purposes is to help beginning farmers, and I see we had a lot of FFA folks here that maybe someday might want to be people who might want to use this program. And then I also see that one of the other things here is to restructure loans that have become undersecured. What does that mean, undersecured? Are they, is the property not worth what it used to be, or?
Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, that's a very good question, and that's really the condition that we were experiencing back in 86 when the loan program was established. Many farmers are carrying debt that maybe if land value is maybe $3,000 an acre at that time, they were carrying debt at $3,000 per acre, but the land actually had diminished to $1,500 an acre. So that was a condition where it would prompt the lenders to initiate foreclosure proceedings. The idea of this program is to restructure the debt to the value of the collateral and keep farmers on the land. So it's intended to restructure existing debt.
Mr. Chairman? So is there much use for that right now? Are there departments who are using that?
Yeah.
Who are dealing with foreclosure?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, there is. Quite honestly, we see an increase in applications today, and the reason for that is because we've had, I'd say, negative earnings in the farm sector in the past couple of years. Yep. And so many farmers are carrying some open accounts or, you know, some cash flow problems. And so what they can do is restructure against the equity in their real estate. As a lender, I've never liked to do that. That's not my first choice, but it can be done. It can be helpful as a way, to continue business.
Representative Clark?
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Representative Keel, Vice Chair Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out to Representative Sundin that farmers never really quit. They just kind of fade.
So they don't put them out to pasture?
They don't put them out to pasture, no.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you for your interest in House File 2601. And in supporting this bill, you're supporting the farmers of Minnesota. And you already have done that today by consuming that taffy. It contains corn syrup, egg whites, sugar, and evaporated milk. So thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. So any other questions, members? Any other questions? You know, why we have the, all the FFAers in the room, you have a little feud maybe going on, you and Representative Eklund, about, you know, who's best looking or something like that? What was that? You want to settle that here today? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund and I both graduated from International Falls High School in 1976, and there's somewhat of a contest on who the best looking member or graduate of that class was. So can we have a vote here? show of hands, would it be Representative Eklund? Raise your hand.
Yeah. We're going to roll call that.
Oh, okay. or the fellow that supports farmers here.
So we digress. So any other questions for Representative Sundin? Seeing none. Before we let you go, Deputy Commissioner, Representative Clark and I, it's a different subject, but I'm going to go there right now. Representative Clark and I are just strong advocates for urban agriculture. Mm-hmm. And we'd like you, when you take this message back, we'd like you to take a message back to the commissioner and subsequently to the governor that not only do we support urban ag, but we're looking for some additional funds to do that. And one of the things that were brought up, and we're visiting with Ms. Place as well, is the whole thing through racial disparities. So we heard some very compelling testimony on how this would help address that as well. So when you go back to the office over there, if you'd carry that message with us, we'd greatly appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do so.
All right, thank you. Representative Sundin, seeing no more questions, thank you for bringing this bill forward, and it's held over. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, you want to...
I roll on your
guys just sit there and laugh.
Maybe if you answer that for
Well, first we tried to move it, then I run over the paperwork.
How many of you are going to come back? Fortunately, they can't find them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it. I don't know how you do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We'll just don't jump off a building.
Yeah, just go.
I think you better. That's a big load, yeah. Yeah, I know. It gets overwhelming.
Thanks.
Well, Chair Hamilton, are you?
Yes, Madam Chair. I think, which one do we want to take first? 3153? Okay. Madam Chair, I would like to move 3153, and this will be held over as well.
Okay. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, to the bill. Coming off of the avian influenza outbreak, everybody pulled together, and Minnesota became national leaders, not only in that, but as we look at emerging diseases. And so we set up meetings afterwards, and we met with the Department of Agriculture, Board of Animal Health, University of Minnesota, and others to ask the question, one, are we prepared for any other type of disease, crops or livestock or poultry, that may be coming our way? That was one. And what would we need to make sure that we are prepared in the event there's any deficiencies? So that was a task that many of us in legislature asked the previously mentioned organizations, if you will. And so what we have is worked very closely with Dean Ames here and individuals over at the Veterinarian Diagnostic Lab. And so you see here a proposal for $283,000 for some specific equipment that would not only maintain but also increase animal disease testing capacity. So that's the overview of the bill. I do have some testifiers. I would like to make a few comments, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Mr. Ames, would you like to go? Dr. Ames, would you like to go first?
Sure. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It's my pleasure to be here today. Joining me today is our new Veterinary Diagnostic Lab Director, Jerry Torreson. He's been on the job for 3 hours now. This is his first day of work, so I didn't think it'd be fair to make him present today. But Jerry is actually no stranger to Minnesota or agriculture. He got his DVM and PhD from the University of Minnesota. He spent over 15 years in the private sector working for swine genetic companies, swine nutrition companies, livestock nutrition companies, and also working for one of the large veterinary practices and swine practices in the state. He's also spent 7 years working in the diagnostic lab. So he's got a great background. I think he'll do a great job. And also here today in the audience is Dr. Hartman, who's the director of the Board of Animal Health. And the director of the diagnostic lab has dual reporting to the dean of the vet school and the director of the Board of Animal Health. So Dr. Hartman's here to check out his new employee as well. And also Dr. Haggerty, who is from the MBMA, are here as well in support of this. So just real briefly, I think you're familiar with the diagnostic lab and its service to veterinarians, scientists, educators, companion animal owners, but especially to livestock and poultry producers and those industries. And it plays this vital role in diagnosing existing conditions, but also identifying and monitoring emerging diseases and developing new diagnostic methods. And so it has this critical role in protecting the animal health and the food safety of Minnesota's industries and food supply. And the validated tests that are developed and utilized are utilized in both in St. Paul at the diagnostic lab, but also in the Minnesota Poultry Testing Lab that's based in Willmar. And these tests are part of day-to-day management, but they're also the part that play a really important role in any major disease response. Because any control program, the foundation of that control program or the foundation of new biosecurity protocols is going to rely on accurate testing and rapid diagnosis. And so the diagnostic lab is an accredited lab. It's the only full-service lab serving the animal owners of the state. And it performs about 1.4 million tests and procedures a year. And the equipment requests outlined in this legislation will ensure that the diagnostic lab continues to stay a national leader and will also more effectively serve the livestock producers of the state. So specifically, this equipment will allow the VDL to continue to serve the ever-growing demands of our clientele by having dedicated equipment that will be used in a development laboratory. We've created dedicated lab space within the VDL. We've identified trained personnel within the VDL to deal with this growing list, ever-growing list of diagnostic tests that are requested by our users and our veterinarians. But in order to be a national leader in this test development, it's necessary to have separate equipment and dedicated personnel that can work offline from the busy diagnostic service lab that's running all the tests on a daily basis. So as Representative Hamilton mentioned, that lab ran 25,000 avian influenza PCR tests in the 4 months surrounding the outbreak, in addition to the 55,000 tests that they normally would have run in that same time period. So we really need a dedicated lab that can be work offline and just focus on test development and this growing list of tests that we're being requested to produce and validate. An additional important piece of equipment also included in this legislation is something called next generation sequencing, which provides us the ability to find all viral agents present in a sample when we don't know what's there. And so without getting too technical, our current molecular PCR testing that we use, it'll tell us if a specific agent is there or not, but it won't tell us what else might be there. So this new equipment will allow us to identify all viruses that are present in tissues or blood samples that are submitted and collected from affected animals. In addition to this new agent discovery, it also promotes more rapid diagnosis, resulting in more appropriate treatment and prevention. And finally, it can be used to tell us how an organism is being spread, which lets us design specific biosecurity and evaluation of environmental contamination. So thank you for the opportunity to testify about this important legislation.
Thank you, Dr. Ames. Dr. Torreson, would you like to comment at all?
I'm very excited to be taking over as the director of the Diagnostic Lab, Madam Chairman and Committee, and appreciate the support that you've provided in the past and look forward to ongoing support in the future.
Thank you. Welcome.
And Madam Chair is also Representative Applebaum's constituent, so we just picked up another vote.
We'll see.
That was harsh.
I hope so.
Okay. We'll stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Members, does anyone have any? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Ames. So that sounds like a very exciting opportunity. If you would have this kind of ability to diagnose things that you don't really know what they are, but you'd be able to find out, what's the potential for then future opportunities of research on specific things? I'm not able to ask the question very correctly, but it just seems like, wow, this could be just mind-blowing. I mean, you can actually change so many things that are out there and have early diagnosis to be able to then do research that would help to prevent in the future. And just if you could just elaborate on that, it just sounds very exciting to me.
No, I think it's a Madam Chair and Representative Poppy, it's a great question. And the one, I think, excellent fact of having the diagnostic lab be part of the University of Minnesota is that our researchers within the veterinary college, and our pathologists and diagnosticians within the diagnostic lab work seamlessly and synergistically on problems. So something that gets identified through this equipment and this surveillance can then be worked on by our researchers to understand its importance. With equipment like this, there are great opportunities and some challenges. And so one of the things that is also interesting about this is that it does give you the ability to tell if it's a newly introduced agent or if it's something that's been there for many, many years and you just happen to find it because of this new equipment. So in the latter case, it may not have an important role for causing disease, but in the former case, it probably does. And so, I think it'll be very important for the researchers to work together with our diagnosticians and evaluate the significance of these newly detected agents and determine when and how and if we should design control strategies.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Ames, I have more of a general question. You mentioned the number of tests that you did last year on the avian influenza, and let's hope that doesn't happen again for forever, I guess. But my question deals with the new expansion coming at the lab in Willmar, where they can do those tests out in the field. Would that free up some more of your staff or equipment to do more of this cutting edge research type things, or how will that affect the day-to-day operations of your lab?
It will certainly provide some ability. It will take some of the pressure off the main lab in the St. Paul campus. It'll also provide a great opportunity to provide greater service to the poultry industry in the Willmar area. There'll be more molecular-based testing that can be done in the Willmar area. Right now, there is none. We do bacteriology. We do serology, looking for antibodies, but we don't do molecular testing in Willmar. With this new expansion that's going to happen at the Minnesota Poultry Testing Lab, it will give us that ability, and it won't be just focused on avian influenza. It'll be focused on any important disease where that testing methodology is appropriate for the poultry industry.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's obvious, the good work you do for the agricultural industries, but I'm just wondering about if you collaborate with other agencies such as the DNR, if there's chronic wasting disease or the fish in Rainy Lake develop a fungus or anything like that, where do they go for diagnostics and advice?
So we do a lot of routine, Madam Chair and Representative Sundin, we do a lot of routine testing for the DNR. We do have an aquaculture specialist within the diagnostic lab that has developed a number of tests, including testing for viral hemorrhagic septicemia and freshwater fish. We do a lot of routine testing for the bait fish industry to make sure that they're free of disease going into our area lakes. So, and we have developed tests for other wildlife diseases. We routinely ran the tests for chronic wasting disease when there was an active surveillance program going on for that. We routinely ran the tests for tuberculosis when we were controlling for that in our wildlife and cattle populations. So, yeah, we do a lot of that. And we're currently heavily involved in the Moose Project, looking at trying to find explanations for the decline in the moose population in northeastern Minnesota.
Members, any other questions? I didn't ask the audience if there was anyone that would like to testify for or against. Seems pretty quiet. Chair Hamilton, do you have anything else to add?
Madam Chair, the testifiers did a fantastic job explaining the importance of this, and I, simply ask for everybody's support as we move forward. And we're working on the funding side of this, of course. So it's work in progress, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
So I would renew my motion to have House File 3153 to be held over.
Okay. That would be laid over, huh? Yep. All right.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the next bill and the final bill for the day, I believe, is House File 3154. So put that before us, Madam Chair. This one, too, would be held over.
Okay. House File 3154, and that will be laid over?
Yes.
So go ahead, Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, this stemmed from a conversation, actually, that I had early on, beginning with Mr. Santo Cruz. He had taken a tour through the university and otherwise, and we have a tremendous amount of data at the university, and we wanted to be able to basically capture that data and make some, you know, some sound decisions off of it. And in addition to that, I was back home and I was talking to some veterinarians as well, and what they said, it would be extremely beneficial if we could develop this software tool, not only understand you know, the movement of unique pathogen strains across the state, but also be able to monitor, we were talking about monitoring any antibiotic resistance, and then subsequently you could then incorporate you know, biosecurity practices within the livestock, poultry, and et cetera, businesses all across the state. And so turning to the University of Minnesota, we have a plan now in front of you to be able to capture that data and develop this software tool. And once again, I have the testifiers speak on this again.
Okay. Dr. Ames.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So in order for the VDL to continue to lead the nation, its diagnostic services, enhanced utilization of diagnostic testing results and data are very important, as Representative Hamilton mentioned, for our users. Samples submitted to the VDL that are positive for disease-causing pathogens, we can now analyze them and determine them, you know, the specific DNA or RNA fingerprint, so classifying them as a unique strain. So this has made tracking of diseases much, much more sophisticated, but also challenging, and it's created really large and complicated data sets. And so currently, the data presentations available to our VDL users are often large geographic representations with epidemiologic summaries for a specific disease. And our proposal is to present the data in a manner which veterinarians or producers can see, where they can see all the relevant data applied to a specific farm or a production site. The diagnostic results for samples submitted for a site or a production system would also be presented as the change over time. So again, instead of having to look at a large geographic map saying this is what's happening in 2015 for, you know, disease X, we could be tracking it over time on a specific farm and be documenting if things are changing or actually if they're not changing. The site-specific data will also be presented in a format that will allow clients to follow the flow of animals and their infectious agents to new sites if that's occurring. For example, pigs and their infectious agents from one sow farm can be followed over time as they're moved to nursery and finishing sites, and sites supplied by multiple sow farms can see what agents they should expect with the pigs and how these agents compare to pigs coming from different sites. So it allows the opportunity to anticipate disease events and to also apply control measures in a farm-specific manner. In this way, infectious agents can be followed over time and their disease expression more easily monitored, and less time would be spent by VDL users on compiling all the data and analyzing multiple data reports, and more time could then be spent on making decisions and preventing disease. Additionally, the new FDA regulations involving feed-grade antibiotics, where antibiotic use will require veterinary prescriptions, this is creating an emerging need to understand and monitor antibiotic resistance across production systems so that veterinarians can accurately and accountably prescribe the antibiotics needed for disease prevention and for ensuring animal welfare. So in summary, this enhanced data reporting and analysis services supported by this legislation would be made available to VDL users and would be unique in the nation. And the legislation requests are for a one-time investment in programming support and software development to ensure diagnostic results and the huge data sets involved are adequately utilized and support our livestock industries in a user-friendly manner. Our information system at the diagnostic lab is one of the best in the nation. It's one that has been developed by not only our diagnostic lab personnel, but information technology specialists at the university. Recently, Texas A&M University Diagnostic Lab Director went on a tour of various diagnostic labs looking at their information systems and has recently contacted us saying he's interested in accessing our system and considers it the leading system in the nation. So this investment will continue to allow us to be a leader in the nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ain. That's quite a compliment, the whole nation. So, wonderful. Representative Clark, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. So what does the antibiotic resistance work that you're doing look like?
Well, Dr. Ains.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So currently, we have quite a bit of resistance, antibiotic resistance research going on within the veterinary college. And so that research is kind of different than what we're talking about here. This would be a specific tool that would allow veterinarians and their producers to monitor if antibiotic resistance is occurring and where it's occurring and for which drugs it's occurring. And then the veterinarians that are writing prescriptions could be much more accurate and precise in the drugs they're prescribing for the specific farm units that they're working with. To answer the first part of your question, most of our research on antibiotic resistance is focusing on antibiotic use and resistance patterns that are being created, but then specifically looking at alternatives to antibiotic use. So in other words, when antibiotics are used, they create a change in the flora in the intestine. And by doing that, it also prevents disease, and it also, in some cases, enhances growth. So what is happening in the microbiologic flora of the intestine that's enhancing growth? And we're looking at the specific changes and products that are being produced. So could we feed probiotics? Are there specific probiotics that would mimic the growth promoting potentials? Could we feed a probiotic that specifically would inhibit salmonella so that we would have less salmonella carcass contamination and food safety risks? Those are the kind of research studies that are ongoing right now. There's also studies going on around worker safety. Are MRSA organisms being transferred to farm workers from handling animals? I'm very proud of the work that's being done at the University of Minnesota, at our veterinary college. There's currently a President's Advisory Council formed within the nation that's got a 15-member panel addressing antimicrobial resistance. On that panel, there's four veterinarians. There's also producers. There's also physicians. There's also public health specialists. But of those four veterinarians, two of them are faculty members from the University of Minnesota.
Representative Clark, did you have a
thank comment? Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, it's very interesting to hear you talk about probiotics as possible alternatives to antibiotics as growth enhancers or anything like that, because it's always been a concern to me that we're using antibiotics to promote growth. Is that just 100% now in the production? I mean,
that's gone. So those the use of antibiotics for growth promotants is no longer being utilized, but antibiotics will continue to be used for targeted disease prevention, and I believe they have a very important role in ensuring animal welfare. That use has to be carefully monitored and precisely used, and so having the data analysis that we've talked about would help us with that.
Madam Chair?
Representative Clark.
Thank you. So So you're assuring us that it's not 100% nowhere in Minnesota or nowhere in the country is not being used for growth promotion?
Well, the feed directive is...
The restrictions are coming.
So when the restrictions are in place, and I don't know if I can tell you the exact date they're kicking in. I don't know if Representative Hamilton knows, but when that comes into effect, then they will stop being used for growth promoting purposes.
So it hasn't happened yet, but it's coming.
Yes.
This year.
Yes, and I just don't know the exact date. I'm sorry, I can't give you that.
Madam Chair, I think Representative Clark. I mean, again, I'm glad to hear that because if antibiotics are needed for treatment, you know, we've hurt ourselves by just using it for growth and making it ineffective for treatment, so it's good to hear that. And the idea of the probiotics is very interesting. In both of those cases, is there a database being created that's tracking this more than just for the individual farmer, but something that you as a research university or maybe we as a state, are we tracking that information, you know, so we're building a database on that?
The Department of Health certainly monitors antibiotic resistance, we have been monitoring it sort of within research protocols. So we design a research study, we look at a population of animals, but we have not been tracking it universally across populations of animals. And we're proposing that this new software and information technology enhancement would help us with that.
So, Representative, one final question. So when you said the farm workers themselves also would be part of the study, and that is something that we are keeping track of, is that through the health department, or are we not keeping track of that?
So there's a large study that is based out of Minnesota. It's a partnership between the Department of Health and the School of Public Health and the Veterinary College. The School of Public Health is the lead, and it's called UMASH, the Upper Midwest Safety in Agriculture, Safety, and Health. It's funded by NIOSH, so the Institution of Occupational Safety and Health, to look at worker safety on farms. The veterinary school component of that is tracking things like transfer of microorganisms from farm animals to farm workers. There's also a big part of that dealing with worker safety and injuries, etc. So that's been our role in monitoring that.
Thank you.
Any other members have questions at all? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Very interesting. And I'm just a farmer, but I think I understood most of what you were talking about. And it sounds like you're talking about more storage capability or cloud to store more of these complex things. So just if you could put in layman's terms, what is this $1.8 million going to buy us?
Dr. Ames.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So basically, this is just hiring people to work on this development of the information technology systems and then creating the software programs that allow the analysis of these large data sets. So currently, we have this tons and tons of information, but we need to go in and do tailored inquisitions into all those large data sets. And in order to be able to do them, especially on farm-specific basis, we need to create tailored software programs.
Representative Anderson?
I've got it now, Madam Chair.
I have to point out to you, Representative Anderson, that there's just... We're not just farmers, just a farmer. We are providing food. They can't survive without us. Just kidding. Anyway. Anybody else have anybody in the audience have anything to add? Or looks like we're ready to go.
Wrapping it up.
Chair Anderson. Or Chair. Wrong guy. Chair Hamilton.
almost got better looking there for a moment. And so, Madam Chair and Committee, you know, it's interesting. You take a look at everybody pulling together over the avian influenza outbreak, and those FFA students that were in the office that I occupy upstairs, they came in and shared with me they're at a national convention. And they said that they were so proud when they left there because they talked about the avian influenza piece, and everybody from other states was talking about how Minnesota was the leader, and that was the model, right? And they just said, as a student, they're so proud. So you look at what we have with the Department of Agriculture, the Board of Animal Health, the U of M, all the stakeholders. It's fascinating. So what we're wanting to do is continue to be national leaders and world leaders, and we can do that. And so we're wanting to invest in these softwares, and we're wanting to invest in the equipments, et cetera, to make sure that we maintain that. So, Madam Chair, I'm also asking, we're going to hold this over. I'm going to be working diligently to find funding for this, and then I simply ask for everybody's support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with that, we will hold House File 3154 will be laid over. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Is that all done?
Thank you. Welcome.
Well, with that, members, we are...
Yeah.